From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Today in the 21st state, fans of the Chicago Sky will be gathering in Millennium Park in the center of downtown to celebrate the team's first ever WNBA championship. Farther south, reports yesterday out of Dixmoor, Illinois, are that people were going on 3 days without water after multiple breaks in the pipe that supplies water to the city. "We weren't surprised," resident Martha Montero told the Chicago Tribune, "because we're just like, oh, it's just another day in Dixmoor where our water is getting shut off for no reason." Meanwhile, in Springfield, members of the Illinois House and Senate are reconvening for what's billed as the fall veto session, but don't let the name fool you. With Democrats in control of both the Illinois House and Senate, and Democratic Governor J.B. Pritzker has rarely vetoed any legislation. And in fact, there are no vetoes pending right now. Rather, the next 2 weeks are an opportunity for lawmakers to catch up on the backlog of ideas they've built up during the truncated legislative sessions of the pandemic and deal with other pressing issues. From the state's COVID response to expanding abortion rights to drawing new legislative maps for members of the Congress, lawmakers have a full agenda. Joining me to talk more about this are two veteran State House reporters. Amanda Vinicky is a correspondent for Chicago Tonight on PBS station WTTW. Amanda and I used to share an office in the State House press room. Now we talk more on the radio than we do offline. So nice to catch up with you today, Amanda.
And I always love connecting with you in any way, shape, or form, in real life or on the radio, Brian.
Also with us is Dan Petrella, who covers state government for the Chicago Tribune. Dan, long time no talk with you as well. Welcome back to the 21st.
Good to be here, Brian. Thanks for having me.
So, listeners, as ever, you're invited to join our conversation at 800-222-9455. If you have a question or comment on what the legislature has in store for this coming session, 800-222-9455. Maybe you have an opinion on whether you want to see Democrats press their advantage on the congressional maps or take a more bipartisan approach. Either way, you can let us know, 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or tweet us at 21st show. All right, Amanda, I'm going to begin with you and with the state's COVID response. Can you talk about some of the religious objections we're seeing cropping up to complying with the governor's vaccinate or test mandates?
Sure. Well, religious or just conscience, it doesn't necessarily have to be related to God. What we're seeing some people do, be it police officers, those who work in nursing homes, teachers, this is certainly something that school districts are experiencing, and that is using the state's law that is meant to protect doctors, nurses, and others in the healthcare industry from performing things that they object to, again, for religious or other moral reasons. So things like, you know, performing services related to abortions that they can use, they have protection. It's the Illinois healthcare right of conscience, not right of religion, healthcare right of conscience law. And folks are using that to say, not only just with vaccines, but also the state's mask mandates, that they don't have to comply with these orders that are being given by their employers. And we're seeing this in cases being used by, for example, teachers that wrote a letter to the school district and the school district accepting it. Other cases, this is being brought to court, and we expect to see more of that. And it's really sort of a twist, because when you speak with some of the experts, they say, this is never how the law was intended. And in fact, there's question as to whether it will actually hold up within the judicial system. But as of now, it is something that appears, at least in pockets, to be an effective way to get around any of the mandates for testing, masking, and vaccination.
And Dan, Amanda mentioned some of the groups that this affects, teachers. We've certainly seen police and police unions put up a really big fight, especially in Chicago, but in other places in Illinois as well, right?
Yes, that's been a big ongoing issue, especially over the last few days, for Mayor Lori Lightfoot here in Chicago. Many Chicago Police Department officers refusing to comply, being goaded on by the president of their union until a judge ordered him to stop doing that on Friday. So it's been a big issue. You know, not everyone is citing this particular provision in state law, but I know the Pritzker administration would like to get this clarified so that people can stop sort of using this defense as a way to skirt the mandates.
Yeah, and I saw where the head of the state FOP vowed to let constituents know if any lawmakers voted to change the Healthcare Right of Conscience Act. Amanda, this is sort of a broader, I see this as part of a broader story here in that the legislature has not had to make a lot of tough decisions in terms of the COVID response, right? A lot of this has rested on the governor's executive authority. Maybe we're bumping into the limits of that now. Can you talk about this balancing act and how legislators have or have not gotten themselves involved in what the state has done in response to COVID?
Yeah, you know, I sort of, for those who really are closely into the political scene, there was always this, one of the elements of House Speaker Michael Madigan was that he was particularly protective of the legislature's powers and abilities and didn't want the executive to infringe on that. And we sort of let him, I think, let go of the reins for political reasons. And now, of course, he's gone. You have a new Speaker of the Illinois House, Emmanuel Chris Welch. And it does seem as if the legislature has allowed the governor's office, the executive branch, to make the big decisions. And that is something that has, in a sense, worked for them, because then they can sort of, you know, throw their hands up. It's sort of similar to how some employers are thankful that the Biden administration on the national level is taking the reins when it comes to vaccination mandates for companies with 100 employees or more, because then you can put the blame elsewhere. You don't have to take the hard vote. And we've seen that pop up, something that you continually hear Republicans also complain about. And they say that, you know, I mean, this is sort of where one of the things that the GOP candidates for governor are using against Governor J.B. Pritzker is that he has acted, you know, like a king, they say, and trying to assert his power. And so we're going to, see this continually come into play. Mind you, I'm guessing that many of these GOP legislators themselves are thankful that they don't have to take some of the tougher votes. And again, thus far, it's not just with the legislature. The Pritzker administration has had a pretty successful run when it comes to the courts. But particularly, I think, as we are entering sort of new realms of Illinois law that weren't contemplated for this. And further, as a public health emergency continues to stretch on, and when does it stop becoming an emergency? Because unfortunately, it appears as if COVID is going to be here in some way, shape, or form, more than just lingering, but almost here to stay. When does that executive authority let up? At what point in time is it going to be necessary for the judicial and the legislative branches to really get more involved in some of these sort of decisions? And that this is where we're seeing it pop up. And it's, again, something that is part of this overall COVID debate of public health protections and mandates versus personal freedom. And we see that dovetailing abortion. I think we'll talk about that later, as that's elsewhere on the agenda for the veto session. But some of these issues that we continue to see really percolate now and again, because they do involve so much of politics, but also what people feel is their God-given freedoms and rights.
Yeah, well, I'm going to take that opportunity to transition to abortion. But first, I'm going to remind listeners, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Amanda Vinicky, who covers state government and other things for Chicago Tonight on the PBS station WTTW, and Dan Petrella, state government reporter for the Chicago Tribune. Illinois lawmakers are back or heading back to Springfield today for what is scheduled to be a two-week veto session, although it's not really about vetoes. It's just a legislative session. But let's not get bogged down in that. So Amanda mentioned abortion. Dan, I'm going to bring you back into the conversation. Can you update us? What is Illinois' law currently on parental notification when it comes to abortion? And what is at issue potentially in the legislative session?
Yeah, so currently in Illinois, a minor, someone under the age of 18 who's seeking an abortion, a parent or adult member of their household has to be notified 48 hours in advance, whether it's a surgical or medication abortion. And the adult doesn't actually have to give permission for the procedure to happen, but it has to be notified. There is a provision that allows someone, if they feel unsafe, to go before a judge to waive that provision. This has been something that's been on the books since the mid-90s when Republicans were in control of state government, both chambers of the legislature and the governor's office. It was actually blocked in the courts for almost 20 years. It didn't fully go into effect until 2013. And now Democrats who control the state house and the governor's office are pushing to repeal that provision. They say it puts people who are in abusive situations or other unsafe situations at greater risk. And they kind of want to put down a marker after what happened in Texas earlier this year with their essential ban on abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy. So Illinois is really trying to signify itself as a state that's friendly to abortion rights when they're under attack in other parts of the country and potentially at the United States Supreme Court.
Yeah, and Dan, this is part of a long trend of legislation in Illinois going back, you know, at least what, three, four years now with Governor Rauner when he signed some legislation that was expanding abortion rights and protections. I mean, this law is something of an anachronism in a state in which the powers that be, you know, say they really want to champion abortion rights.
Yeah, that's right. Governor Rauner, a Republican, took a lot of heat from his own party for signing a law that allowed people on state health insurance plans and people on Medicaid to have those procedures covered by their insurance plans. And then in Governor Pritzker's first 6 months or so in office, they passed and signed the Reproductive Health Act, which essentially protected the rights that are currently given under the Supreme Court's Roe versus Wade decision in the event that a conservative majority on the Supreme Court overturns that precedent. Abortion would still be legal in Illinois. And there were a number of other provisions of that bill as well. But, you know, Illinois has really tried to position itself at the vanguard of the abortion rights movement, counter to many of its neighboring states and other states across the country that are controlled by Republicans.
And yeah. I guess I'll be interested to see whether this, it's getting a lot of talk, getting a lot of attention. And I think there, those who back repealing the parental notification law believe that they have the momentum because of all the attention on what Texas has done. And yet this is something that has been talked about for really some years now. And there was a serious effort during the regular session to repeal the Parental Notification Act. So whether there will be this momentum again, because whether Texas will propel it to happen, and also looking ahead to next year's elections and those who want to be able to say, hey, we did this in the face of all that has gone against abortion rights, or whether particularly as the suburbs are still in some ways less fully progressive or liberal, however you want to put it, than some of the Chicago districts, whether you're going to see some legislators who, for political or, again, moral reasons, or just, you know, again, because this is such connections with COVID, vaccination mandates, what is going on with children in schools, whether they're going to be queasy to do something along these lines. I think this is not an easy given, despite the Democratic supermajorities in the General Assembly.
Yeah, and certainly a lot of talk in the air these days about parental rights when it comes to healthcare decisions. A lot of people have framed that in the COVID debate, but certainly is also something that people are talking about here. Well, yeah. That's something we're going to go ahead, Dan. Yeah,
I was going to say, if I could chime in quickly, it's something that will be done if it is done with a delayed effective date. It won't be, you know, something that happens immediately, because they're not going to get the supermajorities that they would need to pass something that takes effect sooner rather than later. This is going to be done with a simple, you know, 50% plus one vote, give or take, if they're able to do it.
Right. And so, yeah, basically, if listeners just, like, you do need that higher majority, and Democrats, do we always talk about, they have these big super majorities, but not all Democrats are necessarily on board with this. So it would be the bare minimal majority they would need to get it done. All right, we need to take a break in just a little more than a minute, and we're going to talk about the legislative maps remap for the congressional districts. Also, still some challenges to the state legislative maps. But Dan, before we go to the break, can you just quickly talk about electric vehicles and what the governor is trying to get done there? And then we'll come back and talk more about maps.
Yes, Governor Pritzker has been big on electric vehicle manufacturing, trying to make Illinois a hub of that. There was a big announcement about an electric bus company called Lion Electric coming to the state. And obviously, Rivian Automotive down in Normal has attracted a lot of attention. So he's trying to build up a tax credit program, sort of spinning out of his clean energy package that was just signed into law late this summer to really boost the production of electric vehicles here in Illinois and sort of make Illinois the Detroit of the future automotive industry.
All right. Well, that is something we will continue to follow here on the 21st. All right. We are going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about cartography, something that for those of us who cover politics or have covered politics for a living find to be probably one of the more interesting aspects of what legislators are doing this week and next in Springfield. We're talking with Dan Petrella of the Chicago Tribune and Amanda Vinicky of WTTW News and the program Chicago Tonight. You're listening to the 21st. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. You're listening to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the Illinois General Assembly's two-week late-year legislative session, sometimes known as the veto session, but as we've said, there are not actually any vetoes being considered this week or next. We're speaking with Amanda Vinicky, who covers this stuff for Chicago Tonight on the PBS station WTTW, and Dan Petrella, state government reporter for the Chicago Tribune. 800-222-9455 is our number if you want to join our conversation. If you have a question about what the legislature has in store for this coming two-week session, or you want to talk about map making. We're about to discuss whether some Democrats will be pressing their advantage on congressional maps here or taking a more bipartisan approach as Republicans are urging them to do so. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation, or you can always tweet us at 21st Show. So, Amanda, can you bring us up to date on the Illinois General Assembly's political geography, political map making so far this year?
Yes. So we have, for starters, the General Assembly passed one and the governor signed once and then twice. So we have a law in place right now that puts in place new boundaries for Illinois House and Illinois Senate districts. So we're talking the state legislature, the Illinois General Assembly. That is in place. These are the districts that will be used for the next 22 election and then carrying forward for the next decade, at least if they survive challenges on several fronts. You have, for starters, a pair of lawsuits, one that was filed by Illinois Republicans, another filed by the Mexican American Legal Defense and Education, otherwise known as MALDEF. So the fund, that is, pardon me, MALDEF, the F stands for the fund. Those are two ongoing legal challenges that were filed the first time around and then updated this the second round that are facing these maps. And now we have another two. There is a group that is sort of an ad hoc organization of Black leaders and organizations called Illinois African Americans for Equitable Redistricting that has a complaint filed with the U.S. Department of Justice against the maps that Democrats, by the way, passed over the objections of Republicans. And then now, as of just last night, the NAACP out of the East St. Louis or the Metro East area, so, you know, the Illinois side of St. Louis, also has filed a lawsuit. So this is really interesting because Democrats have said we were transparent about these process. You hear from the governor and leading Democrats, those who backed it, that they went out of their way to make sure that these complied with voting rights laws and that they protected, you hear Pritzker say, Illinois' diversity. But when you have organizations such as the NAACP, Illinois African Americans for Equitably Redistricting, and MALDEF, also the Latino Policy Forum that had been asking the governor to veto that map. Well, those are claims that may not hold up in the public eye. And again, we will wait to see whether they hold up in the court of law.
And this is an interesting fight, Amanda, between sort of what I guess you would say regular Democrats in the old way of talking about it and the more sort of maybe progressive minded independent groups, because you did have Latino legislators, Black legislators, the Speaker of the House himself is African-American, who, you know, signed off on these maps, right?
Yes. And so I think there's Latino frustration that they don't have more districts with a majority of Latino voters, given the increase, particularly relative to Illinois' Black population, in Latino voters. Also frustrations from Muslim groups and Asian American groups that there wasn't an effort to group individuals that go by those that consider themselves in either of those categories to be grouped into a voting block so that they could really have a greater voice. They say, you know, this isn't necessarily about a Latino representative or somebody who is Muslim making their way to the General Assembly. It is about a group of people that are in the minority having an elevated voice and ability to vote as a group so that their voice is heard. And when you talk to these groups, there is that frustration. Really, they say that this seems to be more of an incumbency protection map versus one that is drawn for the voters, particularly, again, those populations.
All right. So, Dan, that's what's happening with the state legislative maps, but still not signed into law are congressional maps. We did get a proposal last Friday. Can you just sort of outline what the stakes are in terms of the number of seats that Illinois is going to have in Congress in the Electoral College in the coming decade and what, you know, majority Democrats have to work with here?
Yes. So the big drama here is that because of some slight population loss and growth in other states, Illinois is losing one of its 18 congressional seats in this new map. So the Democratic majority is working on drawing a map that has only 17 seats. And they're also doing this at a time where Nancy Pelosi, the Speaker of the U.S. House, is trying to preserve a thin majority in the upcoming midterm elections next year. So there's some pressure on Illinois and other Democratic-controlled states to draw maps that will sort of capture as many Democratic seats in Congress as possible so Democrats can hold on to the majority there. A draft came out last week that was seen as sort of a split from the current makeup of 13 Democrats and 5 Republicans to a map where it's possible there could be 14 Democrats and only 3 Republicans given the loss of a seat. It's likely just a first draft of the map, not what will be voted on. There were people on both sides of the aisle that were sort of displeased with where some of the lines fell.
Well, let's talk about that then. Congressman Rodney Davis, right? He's well known to listeners on several of our member stations because he currently represents Champaign-Urbana, parts of Bloomington, Decatur, Springfield, and a sort of a big swath of central Illinois. The new map, what? It draws him out of the district he was in, puts him in this large snake-like district that covers a lot of rural areas and goes up to the Wisconsin border. I think Effingham would be the biggest city if I'm reading it correctly. That's just based on my sort of visual observation of the map. But it goes way far north. Some of the other Republicans were sort of left alone. Congressman Bost. Two of them were drawn together, though, right? LaHood and Miller. And then Kinzinger is also of interest. So take it where you will.
Yes. So a few things there. Davis is an interesting person to watch because he's been kind of flirting with the idea of possibly entering the Republican primary for governor if he doesn't like where his district finally ends up. So that's one storyline that everyone is kind of watching. Kinzinger was lumped into a district with Marie Newman, the freshman from LaGrange in the sort of west southwest suburbs, in a district that was long held by Dan Lipinski. And so Newman is not happy with the lines the way they were drawn. Kinzinger is not particularly happy with the lines the way they were drawn. Lipinski has kind of tossed in the idea of maybe he'll come back and challenge Marie Newman after losing last time. And then in the LaHood Miller new proposed district, that's interesting because you've got very conservative Darren LaHood, the son of former Congressman Ray LaHood, now faced up against very, very conservative Mary Miller, who is sort of very aligned with the far right Trump wing of the party. So they would clash in a primary and one of them would be gone if this map was passed in. So lots of moving parts, a big shakeup of how things would look with our representation in Washington if a map similar to the one that's been proposed is passed.
Yeah, it's interesting how you said very conservative and very, very conservative. One difference is Miller did vote to sort of overturn those states' election results on January 6th. LaHood, I believe, did not vote that way. But yeah, so I mean, Amanda, we're coming to the end of our conversation, but as Dan and I have been alluding to, both sides seem unhappy with this map, right?
Both sides are unhappy, but hold up, everybody. Take a breath. I'm guessing at the end, there's still going to be a lot of individuals who are unhappy, particularly Republicans, and maybe down the road, even Democrats, because this is a word of caution. The more that you ask for any district to be incredibly Democrat or incredibly Republican, more partisan, you're going to get people more on sort of the fringes versus moderates. And that, of course, is, I think, a frustration for the country writ large. But the map that we have now, I'm going to go not out on a limb. I think it's going to be a very sturdy branch and say that this is not going to be the final map. We are going to see at least one other version introduced and probably won't have all that much time for people to complain about it and make their feelings known before the General Assembly takes a vote on it.
That is the way these things go, isn't it? All right. Amanda Vinicky covers the state government and other things for Chicago Tonight from WTTW. Dan Petrella is state government reporter at the Chicago Tribune. Amanda, Dan, thanks so much. Always good to talk with you. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.